AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
The last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
It's always great to have Michael Harding back with us. He's a productive man when it comes to writing a few books, but I want him to explain his new book, Midwinter, to us. Because, Michael, it's not a memoir.
No.
It's not fiction.
No.
Even though there's a fictional character who's central to it. What is it?
It's a meditation.
Okay.
Yeah. You could call it an essay as well.
True.
There is a genre that's, you know, quite ancient and old and has been used by very great writers. There was a fella in the 13th century in China called Kenko.
Not the coffee.
Kenko. No, but that's how I remember his name. And he wrote a book called Essays on Idleness. I love the title. And it was a tradition whereby if you were engaged in public life, there was a moment in your life cycle where you went fishing. You went and wrote poetry. And you reflected on the shortness of life. Now, I thought, I've been yapping away about religion and this, that and the other for years. And I thought, I'm finished now. This was 2 years ago. I'm finished. I'm finished. Memoirs are over. I did 8 volumes of memoir, finished with a story about my father. That's closure. Can't ever do a memoir again. And I'm 70, 72 now. And I thought, Somebody actually said, would you do a book about winter? And I was thinking about it and I thought, you know, that's a lovely idea because it brings me into that space of an essay or a meditation. And then I look back on who are the guys who did this. And they were all kind of monks who were reflecting on the shortness of life. So I thought a book about winter as a metaphor for life, for the short, that everything dies in the end, including humans, including me and you and everybody. That's a really, seemed to me like that's a beautiful thing to try and do a book on.
And you've done that.
Yeah.
And I get the impression that you were somebody who used to struggle more with winter, but have come to terms with it.
Yeah, I had my bad moment about 15 years ago, well, 10 years ago, 2011, 2012, 2013. So I had 3 years where, before then, I would hear my mother before she died using that phrase, oh, I dread the long nights. And she was living alone. And she would say that, and I had no compassion for her. You know, it wasn't in me to feel compassion. I didn't understand what's your problem with winter. But I then fell into depression myself. And I realised, it's amazing the struggle you have when the light goes out of the sky. And it's 4 in the afternoon and it's not that it's dark, but it's grey. And you just, if you are suffering from depression, it can be a very, very hard time.
Or as you also write, the sun doesn't go up as high in the sky even
That's
when
right.
the light is there.
That's right.
You write about the sun in the garden and the trees.
Barely goes over the trees.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you're never actually getting, it's almost as if it's an excuse for a bit of light during the day.
Yeah. Yeah, and the shadows, the stretch of shadows along the fields is extraordinary. So I did have my trouble with winter, but one of the things that helped me come out of, those three things helped me come out of depression. One was therapy. I had a good therapist, 3 or 4 years on and off going to her. That was really superb. Second thing was, and she said it to me, because I had been practicing Buddhist stuff and I had a Buddhist view on detachment and like, never get too impassioned with any emotion that's running through you. It's only a disturbing emotion.
Is that the Buddhist way of thinking?
Yeah, it's kind of detachment. But to be able to say that even when you're angry, it's you're not angry. There's it's like kind of a ripple going through you, and try and they say like be like as immobile as a stick of wood when you feel angry. Just be still, and it will pass. Let it pass. I remember the same used to happen to me when I was smoking. I smoked from about the age of 12 to 40. And I thought I could never give up cigarettes. I was addicted to them. But I got this lesson to say, you're free to smoke, but the desire to smoke will only last 2 or 3 minutes. And I remember, I got that from a book, but I remember doing it like, and this urge would come, this gnawing for a cigarette, and you'd go through the 3 minutes and you realised it goes. It doesn't stay. And it was extraordinary to find that. So I think in depression, I was using the same. I also then felt that I used faith, like my personal faith is Christian. That's my business. It's like, I wouldn't be recommending it to anybody else. And I love Islam. I love Christianity. I love Judaism. I think it's like, these are all pathways. They're all like, the one of the Japanese Zen fellas says, you know, the old monk and the young monk, and they're in the boat. The old monk looks at the moon. He points with his finger at the moon. He says, look at the moon. The young fella looks at the moon. And so it says, the finger is not the moon. The moon is the experience of joy or bliss. Religion is only what gets you there. Religion is only the finger. So,
is religion for you, rather than being a belief in a God or a higher power, is it a sort of a way to achieve a state of mind which gets you through life?
Yeah. I would say that's a good definition of how it works for me. And I think that's how it works for everybody. And the more that I look at, say, if I try and examine texts in Christianity, right, they seem to be the same thing. You know, like we have a surface level of faith. And again, I'm not suggesting Christianity is the pathway. I'm saying that's my pathway. But Buddhist practice kind of is like a scaffolding around that. Everything goes the same direction. And yes, what you realise is it's not going towards all that archaic Victorian language that we grew up with. And we thought that, you know, if you mention religion, people talk about it, they'll say things to you like, well, do you believe in God? Or do you believe in the afterlife? Or hell? And you'll be punished now for your sexual sins and deviance. All that stuff that we just kind of nearly got...
20th century Ireland.
Yeah, or 20th century Europe, or maybe it's been there for 300 or 400 years. I don't know. But certainly the more you look into it, the more you realise there's a deeper conversation, which is about being in the present moment, which is about experiencing like bliss or happiness now. Like really now, like being in the room, as an actor would say, if you were rehearsing. You'll be present now. And all that stuff of like well-being because you're joyful in the present moment, it'll make your children, your family happy, your wife happy, your husband happy. Like that's there, that's the destination. That's the moon, if you like. And that's what religion was trying to get people. So
I'm going to break one of my own golden rules on this programme. Given that it's October and I'm going to mention Christmas, right? I always think Christmas should be kept for December, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That we shouldn't be playing any of the music in the month of November. It should only be in December.
Yeah.
We talk about it then. But I think it is important to your book, Midwinter, because it strikes me from two fronts. That for many people, Christmas is something that they look forward to in the depths of winter. That it's something that the lights, the lights alone, are the singing and the camaraderie and the community and the family and the presence. All of these things are for so many people. It gives them a focus. It takes them towards the end of the year. And then for so many other people, it's not a good time.
Yeah,
it's a time of loneliness.
Yeah.
It's a time of sadness because maybe of the loss of people.
Yeah.
It's for people who just don't enjoy all of this sort of the parties and the bright lights and the rest of it. And that's the type of thing that you do look at in Midwinter, isn't it?
It is. There's the sadness. There's two levels of loneliness at Christmas. One is the loneliness of people who are alone, right? So they're missing people or they have no family that are near them or they're having to spend it on their own and they feel lonely. And the other awful pain of Christmas can be people who are experiencing the tyranny of Christmas with people with whom they are not happy. And that can be a real torture, you know, where everybody is dragged together and we're enduring Christmas. So there are two levels of loneliness. And last year, I was close to somebody who was going through the pain of it being the first Christmas without their son, right? And their son had lost his life by their own actions. And I felt, I have met people from three friends when I was in secondary school at different times who, I say, lost their life by their own hand. I think it's better than the clinical word that people use for that tragedy. But I remember those three guys as being friends and being beautiful, and the mystery of why they kind of walked out always stayed with me. And as I got older, I saw more people in the same condition. And then finally, when you get to my age, you have friends whose children are doing it. Now, there's a loneliness. And there is a terrible sense of loss and bereavement and wondering why, you know, how much we love this girl or this boy. And then this happens. And it's a terrible, terrible thing. And I felt, when I was writing the book about winter and I was meditating on death, so I was meditating on the death of a cat and the death of the trees and the leaves falling and a badger dies and stuff, as they do in winter more than summer in the country. I thought, you have to put human death at the heart of this book as well. The death, midwinter is a metaphor for the annihilation of life. Everything dies.
That story you just told me about somebody you knew who'd lost their loved one.
Yeah.
Is that the inspiration behind this fictional character, Martin, in the book?
It was one of the triggers. It was one of the triggers. I had a number of experiences through years. One was a young woman who used to be a friend of the whole family. You know, she'd be in the house. We've all had experiences of suicide. And I thought, it kind of wrote itself then through last winter, because for some reason I felt that as a most terrible loss. And what I wanted to do was, like, I don't write from inside a person who's committing suicide, because it is a fiction. You know, I wasn't going to write about any particular person. So I created a fiction that in some way gathered aspects of all the stories I'd heard and experienced. And they were stories from the outside of, like, the feeling of loss that, let's say, a parent has or a girlfriend has or a boyfriend has when somebody loses their life. And we've had, like, even, I can say, like, in Leitrim, in my own parish and all that, you know, I've been a few times, a fairly regular times, to the local church where we'd be burying some young lad who lost his life from suicide. And there's over 500 a year suicides in Ireland, and I think about 80 or 90% of them are young men. And there's no way, I can't explain it, nobody can explain it, but what I was trying to deal with was simply the sense of how you can have so much love for somebody and some tragedy like that happens. And in a sense, there's no answer to it.
And you've got to accept that there's no answer?
We have to accept death, our own age. You know, in your 60s, I think you get a bit neurotic about your age. You know, you still think you might be late middle age. And you get a bit worried that, you know, whatever, you've no testosterone left or something. And then by 70, you cross a line. And you say, do you know something? The only way I'm going to do this is accept mortality. And I think that's why people in their 70s get happy. Because they've accepted. That's what's really the book. I'm talking about the book as if it was dark. But I really think that I've written it with a kind of whole big passion of love being the centre. It's the symbol of light in the darkness.
Well, indeed, you know what they say, after the darkness, there comes the light. We got to leave it there. Michael Harding, as ever, it's been great meeting you and talking to you. The essay, or the meditation, as we'll call it, is known as Midwinter, and it's available in all bookshops now. Michael Harding, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Matt.
The Last Word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.